WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into football season. You know, I have naysayers after 30 years and 30 crab cakes. Actually, it was 41 crab cakes. And the naysayers say, you know, Nasty, you don't talk no football no more. You don't talk enough football. You got the governor and all these hot shots on and golf. You ain't talking no football. And I'm like, they've been a football to talk about. The last time we played a football game in anger was 8 months ago. I've had a lot of things to talk about. I love talking football with football people. None that I like more than this guy. Mike Tenier visits Baltimore from time to time. But as you can see from his hat, and my mom and her father were raised in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mike Tenier in South Philly down at Passyunk and the Passyunk Diner. We call that a daddy-o hat. Do you call that a daddy-o hat over in Jersey?
Just call it a hat. We just call it a hat. But your 30 crab cakes inspired me. I want to do 30 cheesesteaks, except that my cardiologist said no. My wife said no.
Dude, I left Baltimore 148 pounds. I came home a tad up on 160, like 158, 159. Ooh, yeah. I tried to pass on French fries and potato chips. I mean, I mostly did. I mostly didn't get the sandwich, which would be the bread. Sometimes, you know how America is. Like, you're a hearty Jersey guy, right? You go out to these places outside the city, and the first thing they did, this is my dad was from Scranton, Pennsylvania. The first thing we had on our kitchen table every night was a loaf of bread and butter. And so they start with that.
Yeah.
And that happened a lot, you know, a lot of places. And I had to abstain. And then these Greek places want to bring in desserts, and they're all good. Right. You know, so I had to really – I was at the beach eating Thrasher's French fries and seeking soft-serve frozen custard. You know, it was bad.
I remember the crab joints down there. Basically, the menu's crabs and fries, crabs and fries, crabs and fries.
Coleslaw.
And coleslaw, right. A cup of mayo, you know. a cup of mayo with some cabbage in it.
Dude, I don't ever go to Philly without getting a cheesesteak somewhere. And I've gotten into this thing. And, you know, Dick Girardi's my lifer friend. You know, I got a lot of Philly friends. He wants to take me to this Joe's place up on the north side. There's Delis. There's a lot. I've never had a Tony Luke's cheesesteak. There's a lot of places I haven't been. I got to get back up to Philly. Unfortunately for the Philly cheesesteak places, I was in Philly. I was in Jersey. I saw Buffett on the 6th of August. And I used Cecil County as my crab cake day that day. I went up to Chesapeake City. But dude, it's football season. You've been over in Philly. I text with the great Jim Schwartz, who has a home on the Eastern Shore this month. He is now in Tennessee. I saw Carson Wentz is no longer there. You know, Philly is a not for long place. Ask Doug Peterson. What's going on up there? It's a mess up there, right?
Well, you know, it's stabilized now because we had this sort of rolling French Revolution coup in which Carson Wentz disappears and Peterson disappears and Schwartz disappears and everything.
I thought you were a math teacher, not a history teacher.
French Revolution might not be the best analogy, we don't know. Well, Sirianni, Hurts, the people who are there now, I don't know what their future is, but the attitude there is positive. Everybody's engaged, everybody's working hard, everybody's staying positive. Hurts comes across like a leader. Sirianni, whatever his strengths and weaknesses are, the players do respond to him. He's out there, rah-rah. He gets comparisons to Dick Vermeil a lot, and that he's over in every practice in every room talking the guys up a little bit. So I don't think this team is going to be very good, but the drama has ended. So the drama is gone now, and a lot of that was a Wentz drama mixed in with a Peterson drama and a Howie Roseman drama. Howie's still there, but it's all his guys underneath him at this point. And the drama is gone. Now what we're left with is, what is this team? And the team looks good with the old veterans, the old veteran holdovers from the Super Bowl and before. They look good. Everything else is a big question.
People tell me the secret in Philly pretzels is the water. Is that true?
The water.
Water.
I don't know what the water.
Water. Okay.
The water and the bread and the pretzels. That's why the cheesesteaks are so good, because whatever it goes on in our water, it makes a very, very soft roll that you can kind of slider, and it makes that very soft pretzel.
I don't call them hoagies, just so you know. I call them subs. You know, I mean, that's just where I'm from. But Mike Tenier is here. He is running, gunning. And listen, the Ravens offseason, and I've sat here and talked about it enough. I mean, Luke's on all the time. Peter King's coming later. You're here. We're going to talk plenty of football this week. Part of this is the offseason itself. where the dreams, the goals, the desires, the we're going to improve the passing game because we lost to Buffalo. We're going to get wide receivers. We're going to get better and deeper and older on our offensive line. We're going to go sign all these guys. And then training camp comes. Your idiot quarterback is unvaccinated. Your running back blows his knee out in the third play of the game against the team that doesn't even have a nickname, even though they reside in our state. We have better crab cakes up here. And the wide receivers can't get on the field. Right. The veteran offensive lineman that you're moving around can't get on the field. Your left tackle, $150 million left tackle, is barely getting on the field. I mean, this offense is a box of chocolates for the Ravens. So all the things they were trying to do to build some consumer confidence and, you know, and probably self-confidence in operating, none of that is there as they head off to Las Vegas next week. That makes a playoff team and a place like Baltimore, where I think you're expecting the Ravens to be a playoff team, makes it a little more interesting when the ball goes up in the air next Monday, I think.
Yeah, the thing you have to deal with is, again, the injuries are a massive concern. Losing Bateman, losing Dobbins, those are a big deal. Your idiot quarterback's unvaccinated, but I think all idiot quarterbacks are unvaccinated. Kirk Cousins, idiot quarterback, unvaccinated. Carson Wentz, idiot quarterback, unvaccinated. Cam Newton, idiot quarterback, unvaccinated and gone. That's the state of affairs in the NFL.
Well, there's no more idiot coaches, right? They took care of that.
Urban Meyer is online too, but we'll get back.
Well, he's an idiot coach. Okay, fine. I mean, maybe right. Make an exception for him.
Maybe that kind of idiot coach. But the thing you have to look at is the Buffalo Bills offseason. They had some vaccination nonsense. They look great in the offseason. They look great in the preseason. Buffalo Bills went out there when Josh Allen was playing and the starters were playing. They just ran down the field and crushed teams. Chiefs look like the Chiefs. They rebuilt their entire offensive line. Browns look pretty good right now. Steelers look good. When Roethlisberger played, Steelers look like their old selves. Ravens didn't show that. So, I don't have no problem saying, oh, the Ravens are a playoff team. I'll say it right now. This is a playoff team. You're looking for Super Bowl contender. And what evidence and what support do you have based on the last 6 months? Ravens fans don't have a lot of evidence and support. Guys got hurt. Guys are having a hard time getting on the field. They showed nothing in the preseason. Chiefs, Steelers, Bills all have evidence and support based on what we've seen in the last 6 weeks.
Mike Tenier is here. You can follow him. Tell everybody where you are, because you're doing a lot of different things these days, right? I mean, there are a lot of ways to follow you.
My home is at Football Outsiders right now. So I've cleaned up my act a little bit. I'm full-time at Football Outsiders for the first time in 17 years. So you can get on to FO. You can go on FO Plus subscriber, get lots of stats, lots of extra bonus content there. I'm also at the New York Times once a week, but you know how it is. Football Outsiders is the one that you want to get to if you want to see the unfiltered version of Mike Tenier.
Well, I love having you on, and I love that you, Doug Farrar, some other people I have on are a little more untraditional than me having a notebook when I was 15 with Gene Ubriaco at Skipjack's game saying, Mr. Ubriaco, how did they put the puck in the net tonight? How did Ron Hextall do that? And I look over your shoulder, and I see the Reggie White picture there. I bet you don't know this. Maybe you do know this, and I admit this on the air from time to time. So when the Colts were here, they mainly stunk. Now, the 75, 76, 77, I was born in 68. So I went to those games. I was at the Ghost of the Post game. I was at the Kroner airplane in the upper deck game against the Steelers. So I'm old school. But I was an Oiler fan as an 8, 10-year-old kid, not just because of Earl Campbell and Dan Pastorini. I sort of adopted them because I liked the color blue, the Columbia blue they wore, right? So Lansdowne High School colors. So I was an Oiler fan, and then the team left in 83, right? So I was 15 years, 84, team leaves. I was 15 years old when it left, and I was an Oiler guy. And my dear friend Russ Letra from Dundalk High School in 1986, so it was a year after I graduated high school, 2 years after the team left, hits me and says, hey, man, you want to go to Eagles games? I know how much you miss football and, you know, like you love the Oilers, but like I'm going to get Eagles season tickets. Do you want to go in and go to some games? And this is Buddy Ryan. You know, it's 86. Yeah. So this is Buddy Ryan. We had season tickets in section 721, which is right behind home plate, row one. So we were in the yellow seats, row one. And it was a family section. It said all my tickets, which means there was no beer in our section.
Okay.
1986, right? I was 8. I didn't care. I didn't go to games to get drunk then or now. Like I was not. I'm not a sports drinker. Maybe at the racetrack or Preakness.
Right.
But I've never. I don't think I've ever been drunk at a baseball or football. Literally. I mean, concerts, guilty. but not never a game. So I went for 6 years to 4 or 5 games a year. His wife was a Cowboys fan, so she always took the Cowboys ticket. Okay. I never really had interest in Giants. I wasn't an NFC East guy, but I went to lots of games. I mean, I went to lots of Richie Kotze, a lot of games where Baldinger was on the line, a lot of Mike Quick. I kidded Jim Everett when I had him on the show. I didn't call him Chris, but I was at the game where he beat the Eagles on Christmas Eve. And that was one of the great victories of his career. So I your Eagles passion and all that, is that your, give me your background, because I've never asked you this stuff out of season as to how a math teacher who once taught Joe Flacco, were you an Eagles season ticket? Are you an Eagles nerd?
I was an Eagles nerd, a born and raised Eagles passionate fan, not a season ticket holder. We couldn't afford it back here in where we were. Like my buddies and I, we were in the basement with the TV on. We were next to the radio a lot of times, especially early in the Buddy Ryan
era. You weren't lucky enough to be in a 700 level when they locked the bathrooms after the storm and it was 10 degrees and all the guys were peeing in the alcove of the vet. You weren't there for that.
I did a little bit of that stuff at Phillies games, which were a little more affordable.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, we got into a couple of fights at Phillies games. And it's easier to drink at a baseball game than a football game, frankly, because baseball's boring. But we won't get into that right now. But no. Like a passionate Eagles fan. But like I said, in those early Buddy days, the Eagles didn't sell out. You couldn't even see the home games. Because not until Buddy like established his program and the Eagles mania returned were their sellouts. So we were like next to the radio. Yeah, and a couple of guys who were Eagles fans and the one token Cowboys fan who's always like, oh, you guys suck. And we wound up beating the daylights out of him.
Right.
But yeah, it was an absolute passion for the Eagles, which became a passion for football, which led me, when I was a math teacher, to wind up going on message boards and bulletin boards and all that stuff when the internet came around.
Well, you're also 5 minutes from NFL Films, where you live. Literally.
5 minutes from NFL Films, but that didn't come in until after I was already doing all this other stuff. So fantasy football was a big deal. You remember in the 90s, fantasy football, you had to be like it wasn't like now where it's just all sitting on your phone. You had to go hunting all over the place to get the information. I was a huge fan of that. I started writing about it, writing weird little outlets, writing on the internet, just whoever would hear me. And one thing or another, the passion for football started with the Eagles, turned into a career.
Well, I love what you and Aaron do. I know we have Aaron Schatz on all the time. Aaron Schatz was introduced to me by Jim Schwartz in Indianapolis at the Combine in probably 2004 or 2005. Yeah. And I started to get, and these conversations, if you want to get nerdy, are always better when Luke's involved. You know that, because Luke is what, much more on the analytics side. But certainly for the Ravens in analytics and using this, Eric DeCosta and I have a long-term relationship. I remember 5-6 years ago, he was coming to me and talking to me a little bit about what baseball was doing, what the Astros were doing and the Yankees were doing with analytics. And you guys were sort of the ones breeding that on the outside, football outsiders, right? On the outside of now pretty well-used sort of statistical breakdowns in all sorts of ways came from the outside in football, right? Like that the insiders use technology that was developed and analytics that were developed and techniques that were developed outside the game.
Right. And one of the things, Aaron, 2004, 2005, creating DVOA and things like that, coaches and assistant GMs and people like that start reaching out to him because the material was good. The material was useful. And we weren't crowing about it all over the internet. Like, oh, we talked to such and such, whatever. Fast forward a few years later, the Ravens were one of the teams with the most robust analytics departments in the NFL, and they hired their people off the internet. So they didn't go like on some search or bring somebody in. They were hiring people off the internet who were doing good work, who were doing smart work, weren't necessarily blowing their own horns a lot, but people who were out
there.
What
is smart work?
Smart work is where you do analytics, you analyze them, and you analyze your own flaws and the flaws in your techniques and your limits as much as you analyze your results. So when you say, we made this conclusion, the team should always go for it on fourth down. And you come to that conclusion, when you write about it, when you talk about it, you also say, this assumption is based on the idea that kickers can only aim this percent. We don't have the data on this and that. So this could be wrong if we made assumption A, B, and C, they're wrong. If you're doing all that smart work, people who understand both football and math know you're doing it. If you just put together a thing and say, I have a conclusion, I'm going to yell scream across the internet, people notice that. Maybe you get clicks and maybe you get a job and maybe you write an article about it. But you don't survive for 16, 17 years. You don't get jobs with teams. You don't become a leader in the industry, as Aaron Schatz has become.
Would it be a goal of yours to work in the game? I mean, because it's getting to that point that, and I go back to baseball 30 years ago. There's a guy named Eddie Epstein that was a stat guy with the Orioles, sort of post Weaver during the Roland Heeman kind of era. When Baltimore guy went on to work for the Padres, Tony Gwynn, you know, that era. I don't know where Eddie is. If anybody sees Eddie, give him my love. I haven't seen him in a while. I'm still very much in touch with Freddie Yeoman, who out in San Diego has been the assistant GM since Fred Yeoman ran the Orioles 30, 40 years ago. Right. Mm-hmm. But in baseball, I think it's been brought out more and we've seen shifts. It's very optical in baseball as to, this is what they think, this is what they're going to do.
Right.
With the football side of this and probability and math and all of the things that I had trouble with algebra too. I would have been over at Mr. Tenier's house bringing muffins, to sit in your kitchen so you could teach me variables. Cause I really struggle with algebra too. I never made it to and it's not that I don't understand it, but I understand it's sort of like the virus. I'm just going to trust scientists on it instead of trying to dedicate my whole life. I own a radio station. I don't really know how that tower makes the thing in your radio work. If I had to explain that, I would call it mystical rocks or something. You know what I mean? But when it comes to football and how this is being used now with play calling, Harbaugh going on fourth down, the obvious things that they see. But to me, the biggest shift was the whole philosophy of we're going to play football differently. And that's a Belichickian thing to say, we're going to make you play left-handed. The Ravens make everyone play left-handed because they have this unicorn quarterback, as long as they can keep him upright, that forces stress and speed and issues. And I don't think this was a mistake. I mean, I think DaCosta and all of them went into the witch brew 4 or 5 years ago when Flacco was aging. By the way, you're welcome. I hope he does well there. You know how much I love him, and I know you love him too. But I would say this move that we're going to draft differently, have different players, have different needs in the offensive line, value things differently, find market inconsistencies, and find value in players like Nick Boyle to do what they do in a different way, that bears fruit when you're 14-2 and you're bye. Yep. And that sounds good until you get your ass kicked in January. You don't win a Super Bowl, right? Randall Cunningham would be a great example. Randall Cunningham did things during that era that no one else could do. And then it was, can you win games in January? And for better or worse, God bless Reggie White, Baldy, all my, you know, people that played on those teams. It never happened, and it didn't happen for the Oilers either back then.
Yeah, you have to be careful of the sample size.
You run and shoot, gangster. It didn't happen for the Oilers.
Got to be careful.
Your buddy almost socked Kevin Gilbride, and he wasn't wrong still, right?
Yeah, that was a double knockout for those two. You got to be careful of your sample size on something like that because you wind up basing your decision on two games against top competition. I say, well, that proves it. It's like, that doesn't prove it. That's two. You flip a coin twice, it comes up heads twice. It's not a fake coin. You know, that means you get these chances. So one thing I would say is you see analytics in the NFL most clearly on fourth downs, which you mentioned. Teams going for fourth downs much, much more. That's the analytics winning because the old school football guys wanted to punt, and the analytics broke through on that. Another thing you talked about, roster building, the modern mentality with running backs, where you kind of replace running backs, or you don't put a first-round pick on running backs, or you get a committee, all that. That's the analytics breaking through, where teams, you know, we just like evidence after evidence after evidence. You know, after two or three seasons, Todd Gurley is not good anymore. After two or three seasons, Ezekiel Elliott's just another guy. Stop doing that. So the smarter teams have taken that approach. And those are places where you can see it. It's still more obvious in baseball where analytics are getting used. But it's seeping in football in a variety of ways. Those are the ways that are like, above the waterline that like any fan can see it.
But I would say when it comes to the Ravens specifically feeling like whether they are or aren't, I assure you, if Eric DaCosta were here and I gave him the saliva test, he thinks he's better at this than anyone. And they think they have more information than anyone and that they are on the cutting edge. So all of that being said, they were the ones that went in on a completely different, unheard of, never won before system with a kid that is going to run into linebackers head first. right?
Right.
I mean, all of this that went against conventional wisdom, that the first night I sat out in Canton, Ohio 3 years ago and watched him run into linebackers in a Chicago Bears fifth preseason game and like cringed watching my quarterback take hits after watching Joe Flacco try to avoid it royally for 12 years and stay mainly upright until he got knocked over by his own guy, quite frankly, in that game. I still think the Ravens, the beauty in this for the Ravens is show me three other teams that are going to make their Tyler Huntley or their Tyrod Taylor or their whomever the running quarter, even Deshaun Watson, even Cam Newton was running into linebackers and stopped and cut it out. Steve McNair almost died on an operating table. He stopped, he cut it out, and then he died anyway. But for me with quarterbacks and running, the Ravens saw this differently than everyone else, and didn't just say we're going to take him with the 31 pick and make him Cordell Stewart and slash him out and Taysom Hill him or whatever you would call that for you analytics types, but we're going to build a whole party around this guy. And they haven't even given him the $200 million yet, right?
Right, right. And that's the question is, what do they perceive of the future going forward? When they give him that contract, do they decide at this moment we have to be more conventional? So much of what you're talking about is terra incognita. No one's tried this before. So if we talk from an analytics standpoint, you can't necessarily say, well, you know, history tells us with Randall Cunningham, or history tells us with Michael Vick, or with Steve Young, or anybody, history can't tell us anything about this offense. Except you're right, it's built off of market inefficiency, that you can bring in your Mark Edwardses and Nick Boyles and these guys and get results out of them and get Lamar Jackson 32nd overall while everybody was racing up to get Josh Rosen.
And not have to pay a wide receiver $20 million, which other teams feel clearly very compelled that they want to do that. The Ravens thought, we're going to get a wide receiver in the draft in this offense that blocks, that cracks down, that does all that dirty work that like Snead used to do around here, but could still catch. And then can Lamar get him the ball? Can we protect Lamar? Can we make Lamar better outside the numbers? Okay. I mean, they're at it and they're having success, like football outsiders doing it. Instead of zagging, literally.
Yeah. You're finding a market inefficiency. And, you know, whatever happens this year with the Ravens, if they have like a kind of a weak season, if they have like a 9-8 season, it's like, well, that's the indictment.
That sounds so weird. You didn't say that. You didn't say 10-7.
You
don't think they're going to be 11-6?
Well, I'm saying say you go 9-8, it's a bad season. 10-7, it's a weak season. Well, that's the indictment on Lamar Jackson. The whole offense, the whole plan, throw it out the window. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Vikings are going to go out this year with Kirk Cousins for the 15,000th time, run a super conventional system, maybe go 9-8. And when it fails, it's like, well, we'll try that again. We'll try that again.
Let's go get Jared Goff.
Let's go get Jared Goff and do the same damn thing. So like a failure for the Ravens on this great experiment would be like a success for like most of the other teams that don't have an Aaron Rodgers. And that's what you have to keep in mind for this. It's like, well, a failure of this shouldn't be an indictment of everything. It's not an indictment of Lamar Jackson, of the plan, things like that. That's how it'll be interpreted by a lot of people, certainly within the NFL, because it's a hive mind. But it's not how it should be thought of when teams are building and saying, hey, the success that the Ravens had here in Houston, that would be the greatest thing that ever happened. New York Jets, that'd be the greatest thing that ever happened. 14-2 playoff games. Maybe we should take another crack at it and see if we can break through.
Mike Tenier is here. He is the run and gun gangster, although he's given up the run and gun offense at this point. He's analyzing all offenses at Football Outsiders and occasionally at the New York Times. They don't let me write there. You can follow him also out on Twitter and all things social media. Last thing for you, Flacco. I asked you about Philly, and you don't ever brag that you were his math teacher, even though you were. How did he do? Did he get a B? Did he see what did he get?
He got an A.
You got an A. Oh, okay. Well, it's good.
He was a heck of a math student. All the Flaccos were incredible math students. His brother Johnny was better than him. I'm going to tell you right now. His sister Stephanie was better than him in math. But we're not going to talk about Mike. But Joe was a really good
– Mike was a good baseball player. How is Joe – going to get on the field up there? And are you shocked that he's hanging out? I mean, you've known him since he was a kid. I'm not shocked that he's playing for the Philadelphia Eagles and living at home. Yeah. He might do this for 4 more years if they let him.
Did get to see the whole family running on the field a couple times when I was up there on camp, all the little Flaccos.
Make me cry. I saw a picture of it, and I liked it.
Yeah, no, that's a really nice thing for him. He shouldn't, if everything goes according to plan, he's not getting on the field. Jalen Hurts is the starting quarterback here. But there's an opportunity for him to be here. You know, he's an insurance policy. They also have Gardner Minshew up here. Again, the Eagles, I don't think the Eagles are going anyplace. I think his job right now is to kind of mentor Jalen Hurts, and we'll see how that goes.
They gave Jaworski's number. How bad can it go?
Yeah, that's it.
Mike Tenier is here. I apologize for being tardy on you yesterday. I do appreciate you picking up the slack and coming in. And, you know, guys like you that are like real friends of mine in the real world know about this crab cake thing. And now, like, when you come to Baltimore, it's going to be like, you're going to take me to Fadley's. You're going to take me to Costas. So I am happy to oblige with you running on gangster. Yeah. Great hat, by the way. I call that a daddy-o hat, but I had a hat all of my life that I got at my father came back from Venezuela in 1981 and took me to a couple of Phillies games. I saw Nolan Ryan pitch for the Astros up there. And this is after they won the World Series. Strike year, 81. And they gave away a Richie Ashburn red bubble key. I wore that hat most of my childhood that I had that autographed by Richie on the side. It's probably worth 60 or 70 bucks on the interwebs. But, but you know, so I was a big daddy-o hat guy as a kid, just so you know. So there's
my red one. I was looking around my red one.
I'm
missing.
Not losing it right now, but if I lose it, I'd go daddy-o.
Well, that's the secret up here. So
hey, man, don't, you know, I don't ever talk about the snow on the mountain or the fire in the belly.
Good decision.
Take care of yourself. Tell everybody how to subscribe to Football Outsiders. Give me a little insight on that.
Go to Football Outsiders and just go there and look for FO Plus. We're running a lot of specials right now. It's very affordable. You get access to stats. You get picks. You get fantasy advice. You get fantasy start sits. And the Football Outsiders Almanac is still available. Folks, there are 2 weeks left until the season. So there is time to get the Football Outsiders Almanac. It comes with the Kubiak fantasy projections, hundreds of pages, stats, insights, dad jokes, daddy-o hat jokes, everything you need. You go to Football Outsiders, you'll find everything you need right there. It's a click away. Become a member, become a subscriber, become a Football Outsiders Almanac reader.
Did he say Kubiak?
Yeah. 20 years ago, Aaron Schatz named it Kubiak, thinking that Gary Kubiak was going to be an obscure backup quarterback that everyone would forget. Now he's a legendary coach with a Super Bowl ring whose son is still coaching. So we're stuck with the name Kubiak for the fantasy projections.
It's okay with me. I never met him. He was never like when he was here, it's just separation of church and state. John doesn't want us talking to coaches. So I never really met him, but respect the hell out of him. Everybody loved him. I know that. So you said Kubiak. I'm like, he was ours for a minute. We did pretty good with him.
It's like when baseball guys did the Pecota projections. The Pecota, who's a not very well-known middle infielder.
It's so better than a Mendoza projection. Trust me. Okay. Yeah. You know, my last name's Aparicio. It meant glove. There he goes. Mike Tenier, the running gun gangster. You can find him at Football Outsiders, the New York Times, as well as out on the Twitter thing. TANIER. That's the way to find him. You can find me anywhere the internet is sold at WNST AM 1570, including BaltimorePositive.com.